governor of South Dakota. This is how we do social distancing in our state.
That all was right. Great.
Less COVID, more hunting. That's the plan for the future.
All right, now in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to American Shakedown. What you just heard was the governor of South Dakota social distancing in a field while shooting, duck hunting, I believe, or quail hunting. I don't know. I didn't really don't care that much, but it's basically her shooting a gun at a bird while making light of the COVID outbreak that we are still suffering through throughout this country.
Yeah, I guess that's her version of the ivory tower. It's just a big cornfield where she can dick around with a gun. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was hilarious when I saw it, but it is sad. It is like simultaneously mostly sad,
it is hilarious because it is so insane that instead of being a leader and taking charge and being like, hey, people are dying, people are getting sick, this has ravaged our economy, I'm just going to go hunt and make light of people that do take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And this is why we should take it seriously, because there are now 7.1 million people in our country that have been infected with COVID, and 206,000 people have died from COVID. That is more, like CNN put out a chart, and I don't really pay attention to CNN that much, but CNN put out a chart that showed that we have more casualties because of COVID than our last several wars that we've been involved in, that it is basically over 69/11s now. And people will argue that it's no worse than the flu. More people die of the flu. More people die of heart disease. More people die of car crashes. But here's the thing, is like with heart disease and stuff like that, when people make that argument to me, is that if I could go out and somebody could breathe on me and cough on me and give me heart disease on the spot, we would be like, that's criminal. That's insane. Why would I take the chance of that? And that's the same thing. People are dying, so why would I take the chance on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's complete. Yeah, it's just lack of empathy.
That's all it is no empathy. There's zero empathy. But that can segue into a person that has zero empathy. Missouri's governor, who is adamantly anti-mask, refused to do a mask order, has spoken out against it. He and his wife have tested positive for COVID.
Mm-hmm. Did the report say anything about their condition? Are they like, is it severe?
Just tested positive for COVID is all I saw today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what you get for not wearing a mask and then spreading propaganda, telling people not to wear masks.
Yeah.
And pretending it's not real.
Yeah. Midwestern states have been reporting a surge in COVID cases the last like couple of weeks, and Wisconsin's being urged to declare a public health crisis as cases surge up there. Let me see. Yeah, no, actually, they did declare a public health emergency over the case surge.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Yeah, they are now like one of the top states, along with like the Southeast, that are experiencing a huge surge in COVID.
Yeah, this is just kind of a matter of time, really. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like anti-mask propaganda, it's like legislation and we kind of talked about it before, but like legislation preventing people from enacting, or counties or cities or whatever, from like forcing people to wear masks. And yeah, this is the result.
And this is the result. And it is shocking to me that this is still going on. One side has made it political completely, and we are being steamrolled by them. Everybody is starting to back off. Less people are taking it seriously, in my opinion. And that we are not out of the woods yet. We're nowhere close out of the woods. We're about to hit flu season. Mm-hmm. So it's only going to get worse, in my opinion. To lead more bad news, Ruth Bader Ginsburg died since we last recorded. And needless to say, we're fucked on that. You will never forget that Barack Obama nominated Merrick Garland, and the Republicans held out for 8 months, saying that a president who is in election year should not decide who the next Supreme Court justice should be, that the voters should have their choice in the next Supreme Court justice. Lindsey Graham, all the big Republicans argued this point. We are less than 45 days away from our election of Joe Biden and Donald Trump, but they have no problem nominating somebody and to push them through. And that, to me, it just shows you they are never going to play by the own rules that they set for themselves. They never are.
No, they're not. And one of the big justifications I see going around is that it is Trump's constitutional duty to appoint a new Supreme Court justice, regardless of how much time he has left in office. So it's awfully convenient that they can stall for basically an entire year under Obama, and then all of a sudden, there's not even 2 months left in up until the election. But that doesn't matter, because it's a constitutional duty. Like, where was that constitutional duty in fucking 2008? The same constitution that you claim to have read and to give a shit about and to pretend to uphold.
Yeah, that's the thing, is just like, they don't care. Their hypocrisy is their strength, because their own base does not care how hypocritical they are. They just go, well, okay, that's why we win. They play for keeps. There is no civility. There is no bipartisanship. There's no reaching across the aisle. They have made themselves clear since Obama and earlier that they are not going to work with the other side. They are going to do everything in their power to undermine the other side. And I don't like Democrats. Like, anybody that's listens to this show knows, I don't like Democrats. I don't like them at all. But I don't like Republicans even more. And it's because of this hypocrisy. Multiple ones in 2016, when they did this to Barack Obama, such as Lindsey Graham, was saying that, oh, I wouldn't do it if the roles were reversed. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska said earlier this year that if the opportunity came up, that she would not support a Supreme Court justice pick, a nominee, during an election year. She has since softened her stance on that. Came out today on Fox News that she would consider voting to confirm whoever Trump put up.
Yeah.
And
go for it.
No, you go.
Okay. I was just going to mention that Murkowski is... this is the same person back during the impeachment hearings who was teetering the line on whether or not she was one of the crucial votes that the Republicans were after in order to keep Trump in office or to keep him from being impeached and charged with impeachment. she teetered for the longest time, but ultimately she towed the line. She played ball and said something along the lines of, I don't agree with what Trump did, but, well, what was her justification? What he did was wrong, but the charges that the Democrats brought against him is like, you know, she couldn't find him guilty of the specific charges. And that was the Democrats' fault in that case. Because the charges were so vague that it could be applied to basically any situation with enough interpretation. Could have been a slam dunk. I don't know. We've talked about impeachment. I won't go on about it. But this is the same person who, you know, teeters the line, but ultimately she's going to vote with the Republican establishment. Yeah. There's no question about it.
I remember the day that it came out and the next day, and everybody was like, well, maybe Grassley, who doesn't really like Trump that much, he's been pretty silent. Mitt Romney, who hates Donald Trump, the only Republican to vote for impeachment, was basically, rumors were coming out that he was going to be spiteful towards Trump, and Romney said he would vote to confirm, consider to vote to confirm. And Lindsey Graham, of course, will. All of them will fall in line. Mitch McConnell will push this through, and there's not much you can do to stop it. And this is why there's a sense of urgency. With mail-in ballots, they are lawyers in every swing state. And Trump, today, this is from ABC News, Trump argues his nominee is needed on the Supreme Court in time to vote on election legal challenges. Claiming fraud, he has said the GOP would fight the results in court. They're going to fight it. They are going to fight.
Sure.
Like, if you are watching the election this November and you think that the results will stand unless they are supremely in the favor of Donald Trump. And I think even if he won the Electoral College, he would still sue because he will claim voter fraud. It'll be like the Hillary Clinton thing all over again, that he would claim that he won the popular vote.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And
he's never going to let it go.
No, he's not. And that's what's scary. And there's another thing about Trump that I wanted to talk about that I just saw. This is from The Atlantic. And I have opinions on The Atlantic, but this is enough to make me go, this is scary. But the Trump campaign is reportedly planning a way to bypass the 2020 election results in key swing states. The Trump campaign is weighing a post-election strategy that would bypass the results in key swing states by installing electors who would vote for the president in the Electoral College even if he loses.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Election experts have said that the move by state legislators to appoint their own slate of presidential electors after the fact would violate federal. Not that that fucking matters, but these are the states that he's going to put them in with Republican-led legislations. That's Arizona. That's Florida. That's Michigan. That's North Carolina. That's Pennsylvania. That's Wisconsin. Those are the states that Joe Biden has to win. He has to win a majority of them. He might be able to let one fall to the wayside, but he has to win most of these to win. And they have Republican legislations. And if Trump was able to install get those state legislators to install his own electors, then it's over. It's there's not much. And Joe, say that Joe Biden, you know, sues, rightfully so, which he should, no matter how tepid I find Joe Biden, he should. Well, that case goes up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And it's a 6-3 conservative-leaning court. Maybe John Roberts says, no, I'm not co-signing this. Maybe he doesn't. We don't know. but the election will go to Trump.
Yeah. This is like the danger of the past. The Republicans have been after the judicial system ever since Trump. Surely before, but they doubled down on it since Trump took office. Mm-hmm. That's why they've fast-tracked more federal judges than in, 3 years than Obama appointed in his entire 8 years. Now they're stacking the Supreme Court. Yeah. Anything that goes up to a ruling is going to be in favor of them. And that is real fucking bad.
Yeah. And I'll just read this little excerpt because you'll notice a key link here. Using a rationale of baseless claims about widespread voter fraud and other irregularities with mail-in ballots, President Donald Trump would ask state legislators to set aside the popular vote and exercise their power to choose a state elector directly. Adding that the longer Trump succeeds in keeping the vote count in doubt, the more pressure legislators will feel to act before the safe harbor deadline expires.
Mm.
So, he is going to, I've been saying it for months now, he's going to muddy the waters enough to make us doubt it. And we've talked about mail-in voting here multiple times and just how, like, even their own proof doesn't show that the crisis that they paint.
Yeah. And statistically, there are more Democrats voting by mail than Republicans. But yes, even if they were to cancel all mail-in ballots, it still favors Republicans in the end.
Yeah. So, and this is the thing, is like, people are like, you got to get people to turn out, like the highest turnout ever. The plurality where it's just like, he's going to dispute it. He could lose by, I will exaggerate here because I believe he would do it. He could lose 80-20 and he would still take everybody to court and mm-hmm. kick it up to the Supreme Court and steal the election. Republicans are great at stealing elections. If you haven't noticed, audience, they're fucking fantastic at it. They do it all the time by, you know, voter suppression. They do it all the time by legal action, such as 2000, where the Supreme Court basically ruled against Al Gore and gave us George W. Bush during the Florida recounts. They're good at it. They're well practiced. They will try to steal this. And I think everybody that listens to this, if they do steal the election, you have to get out on the streets. You have to, like, do something. I'm not encouraging anybody to do anything fucking crazy. Please don't take that wrong, but you have to do something more than just trending fucking hashtags on Twitter. You have to be more active in this process.
Yeah, there has to be some kind of direct action, and that anything 2020 has shown, it's that direct action fucking works.
Yeah.
The problem is we lost the momentum shortly after George Floyd. That movement kind of, it's still going and it's great, but it's died off quite a bit. But if it had kept going at the full strength at the start, holy shit, like everyone in power was shitting their pants for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
Wall Street was silent. They were just watching and waiting to see what would happen.
Yeah.
And now that they know that the masses have kind of pacified and died down a little bit, they feel comfortable in doing whatever the hell they want, because they know that the repercussion, the backlash, is not going to be strong enough.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly it. And that's why there has to be more. The protests have to continue. Even if Joe Biden is to fucking win, the when with a plurality, the protests need to continue. That's the mm-hmm. only way we're going to get anything done. And everybody's just like, yeah, third party. I like, I'm a firm believer that you can't kick fascism out of power by voting. I do believe that. You might be able to stifle them and get and silence them, but you are not going to uproot the problem, the societal problems, by just thinking voting's the only solution. Voting direct action.
Yeah, the problem runs much deeper than just the voting booths.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to fascism. Yeah, this is a long... I mean, our country is kind of based off of white supremacy in so many ways. So it runs to the core, and it's just that is being exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's more than just the voting booths. I think that's like the message that especially liberals, but even leftists need to take away, especially the DSA.
Mm-hmm.
You can't vote your way into socialism. You have to directly challenge it in so many different ways. Yeah, I don't know. The Supreme Court is like, I mean, it feels like everything in 2020 has been kind of like a mile marker or a milestone. Like, this is it. Can't get any more intense. And then,
It keeps on, the gas pedal keeps on going. We just keep on pressing it harder.
And I think the other thing that I wanted to point out with this Supreme Court thing is that this is a single person who's unexpected to, I mean, people were expecting someone to die, especially RBG when news came out about her cancer sometime earlier this year. And she'd been battling it for a while, but it got kind of bad earlier. But this is a single person who is just unexpectedly shaking up the power dynamic in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And this should be a wake-up call. Like, this should, like, even to, you know, the well-meaning conservative. I'm not talking about the diehard Trumper or the diehard Republican. Fuck them. They're never going to change their minds. But to the well-meaning conservative who, whatever, falls in line for various reasons, this is proof that we have no power as the people. Like, the Constitution has this, you know, you guys tout this line, we the people, we can change everything. The Second Amendment exists for a reason. And yet one person dies in a key position of power and the entire country loses their shit. Because this is how the system is designed. It is power consolidation turned up to 11. And that's a problem. It shouldn't be like this. We're supposed to hold the power, but we don't. And that's just, I don't know, just wanted to point that out. Like, if we're supposed to be a real democracy, if the citizens are supposed to dictate the course of the country, you know, for the most part, at least, but, you know, even through elected democracy and whatever, republic and whatever. Yeah, shouldn't be one person being like deciding the fate of the country. So, yeah. I don't know.
This is something else that happened today. It should have been part of the COVID news. But Congress is poised to leave town until after the election.
What? Starting when?
This is from CNN. Congress is ready to leave Washington as soon as this week until after the election without passing a coronavirus economic stimulus bill that members of both parties, businesses, and hard-hit Americans all agree is desperately needed.
God, dude. Oh, that's right. I remember seeing a headline saying that Pelosi and I think Mnuchin came to an agreement about how to avoid a government shutdown, but it didn't include anything about a stimulus package. So cool. So we're just We're just getting that one singular $1,200 check, yeah, which mine, along with many others, went straight to student loans. And so it's like it never fucking existed in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you're getting nothing.
Yep.
You get a
good
nothing.
Place to live.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. shit, man. I don't know. I guess we should move on.
Yeah.
From dwelling over the Supreme Court to dwelling over updates in the Breonna Taylor case. Because, oh man, there was some shit that happened this week and today as of the time of this recording. So, earlier this week, Louisville Police Department's basically declared a state of emergency like a couple days preceding the announcement of some updates to the Breonna Taylor case. And well, here's the update. And they were, you know, they were expecting people to take to the streets, and holy fuck did they ever. So none of the officers were charged for the murder of Breonna Taylor, but one, there was an indictment against one officer. Because there was, I forget the exact wording, I don't have it in front of me, but something to the effect of negligence when they fired, what, 30 something odd rounds into Breonna Taylor's apartment. And some of them, you know, being an apartment building, these aren't very thick walls. Some of them could have hurt or killed other people inadvertently. And so that's what the indictment was about. It's like, hey, you're shooting, you're going to Rambo. Like, you can go a little bit Rambo, but you're going to Rambo. And it's only against the one. And so apparently he faces up to, potentially up to 5 years of prison. But if that's the maximum, you know, he's not going to get the maximum. He's a fucking police officer. He's not going to, that never happens.
No.
So that, of course, sparked a huge protest up in Louisville and also across the country as well. It's still a little too early to tell exactly what to make of everything that's going on. So far, there have been reports that two officers have been shot at some point, somehow, somewhere during the protest. We don't have any details released yet. And I just kind of tuned into the live stream. It looks like they're launching tear gas currently into some of the crowd. Mm-hmm. And yeah, looks like in Seattle, the police are marching, pushing protesters back. There's, of course, stuff going down in Portland and in Washington, D.C. as well. So it's going on all over the place. Mm-hmm. We're just going to have to see exactly what the aftermath is later. See exactly what happened with those two officers getting shot up. Apparently, they are not in life-threatening condition. That's the only update that I heard.
Yeah, that's what I just checked, and I don't see anything, any like serious condition. I'm not by no means. This is one of those things that people had to know was coming the minute they started. Like, the writing was on the wall the minute they said, "Hey, we're calling all the cops in from vacation. We're going to give you overtime." And it was the writings on the wall that they were going to walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, you've got some of the conservative grifting. I say conservative or loosely. I should say right wing. Because that's much more encompassing, where Everyone's throwing a hissy fit over this U-Haul truck that pulled up somewhere in Louisville, and in it were a bunch of fabric. That was the material that the signs were made out of. They were big signs that multiple people had to carry, but it was just like fabric with like some, you know, flimsy kind of wooden frames, right? Mm-hmm. Inexpensive kind of stuff. And the right were saying that these were fucking riot shields. So I don't know if they know exactly what a riot shield looks like, but it was absolutely too big to be mistaken for one. I mean, for one. Number two, you could see like the fabric kind of waving in the wind as they were moving it. Right, very clearly not a solid material.
Yeah.
I mean, even to give them any sort of credence, like the material would not have had to move. So you could argue that like a big piece of plywood, even if it's like a really thin, you know, 1/4-inch piece of plywood with shit painted on it or something, right? Maybe you could call that a riot shield. It's a huge stretch. You know, 1/4-inch of plywood ain't gonna stop shit. Mm-hmm. But this is like vinyl fabric, dude. Just wave it in the fucking wind. But of course they don't care. And it doesn't matter because it's still effective for their base. It's like, oh yeah, they'll totally get on board with it. It's just totally a riot shield.
Mm-hmm.
Made of fabric. But it's a riot shield. It'll work. In some alternate universe, I guess.
Yeah, and that's why they're so good at controlling the narrative of that, is just like they're literally able to whip their people into a frenzy over fabric, and they're able to convince them that they have riot shields, like solid riot shields.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, oh, peaceful protest. You motherfuckers, you brought guns to a state capitol. Like, you're the last ones that don't need to be joking about peaceful protests. Like, sorry. There is no way that that's a peaceful protest to me.
Yeah.
Even if nobody got harmed, you don't bring guns to anything that's peaceful, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure. And speaking of which, I forgot about this, but there were, of course, right-wing militia people. Quote-unquote militias, of course, you know, it's a mix of actual militiamen and then like fascists who counter-protested in Louisville because they had a couple days to prepare for this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So they were marching down the streets with their camo and shit and, you know, acting all tough guy and whatever. Yep. I don't know if they shot up anyone. I have not seen reports of that, but I also have been kind of staying away from this stuff for my own sanity. So they're there. I mean, to be expected a little bit, but there were some pretty big numbers, honestly. I think more than most counter protests that they've done throughout this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and I guess there was a truck plowing into protesters in Buffalo.
Yep, I saw that. From what I understand, the person that was struck is okay. I'm sure they're banged up, but non-threatening injuries from what I read.
Okay. Well, that's a plus. So that could have been a lot worse. Yeah. I mean, that's all the updates we've got on Breonna Taylor so far. There's just it's hitting the streets already. So I guess next episode we'll touch on what's going on with that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess some other news. So just more mishandling of taxpayer funds. Apparently the Pentagon diverted just about $1 billion of taxpayer money that was intended for masks and medical equipment that got rerouted to defense contractors who were building jet engines and body armor. So, you know, even if you set aside money through the legislative process towards medical endeavors, no guarantee it's actually going to end up, you know, fulfilling that promise. And this one, I don't know. I kind of threw this in because I was expecting to collect a lot more stories, but to kind of like go over and just to quickly cover. But this is more or less another revelation of how gentrification is happening in the U.S. Norfolk, Virginia is using federal tax breaks that was granted by Trump's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2017 to gentrify historically black neighborhoods. And I'll read a couple of excerpts from the it's a Bloomberg article. Quote, then came Opportunity Zones, a program that allows investors to defer taxes on capital gains by placing the money into a fund dedicated to investing in areas deemed as distressed. Virginia awarded Norfolk more zones, more opportunity zones than any other city in the state, meaning a, quote, larger wealth of opportunity, says Sean Washington, senior business developer, development management for the city. Norfolk hopes to leverage its 30 million haul into 150 million, including the opportunity zone eligible money. So this is just, I mean, it's kind of the story of capitalism where they're just using money to magically multiply itself and for the sake of returning to the shareholders, but they're doing this at the expense of where the fuck people can live through gentrification. So I don't know. I don't have a whole lot to say on it other than to just stress even more that this is capitalism working as intended. This is not a bug. This is not crony capitalism. This is just capitalism.
It's a feature.
It is a feature. It is a feature indeed. And then, oh yeah, speaking of like protests, the Department of Justice, like earlier this month, Trump released a memorandum saying, basically calling out some of the major cities like, oh, you can't defund the police. Here are some statistics that are totally not cherry picked or taken out of context or anything like that. Just in the past week, the Department of Justice identified New York City, Seattle, and Portland as, quote, anarchist jurisdictions, which means they're going to receive less federal funding. I tried to do some digging on Seattle and Portland. I couldn't find out exactly how much of their city funding comes from the federal government. Seattle seemed like it was very minuscule, like potentially less than 1%, but that was like revenue predictions for the next year. So I don't know if like the revenue and the funding are the same thing. I don't know. Portland was also difficult to find, but New York City receives 7.5% of its total budget from the federal funding. That's a pretty big blow. I guess time will tell if they follow through with this, with any sort of federal tax cuts or funding cuts from these cities. We'll see if they do this, and if they do, what's going to happen, but or how exactly it's going to look like. It's going to be at the expense of the poorer populations, of course, but
yeah,
how bad it's going to be, you know, I can't really say. Yeah, and it's not just these three cities. Trump is looking to designate even more cities with this anarchist jurisdictions.
And any city that votes Democrat will be designated with it.
Yeah.
He will destroy the cities. he will destroy the cities just to fuck people.
Pretty much, yeah. This is, again, controlling the narrative. It's funny, I was actually talking to someone the other day, and I basically was kind of laughing at myself. It was like during the DNC primaries when, you know, Bernie was still in and, you know, things could have possibly went his way. One of my concerns and a lot of others was that the image he gives off, or, you know, potentially being labeled as a democratic socialist or just a socialist in general, like that was going to hurt him, you know, even if he had some good things to say. But just being labeled as a socialist could have hurt him. And ultimately, that didn't matter. They're going to pick Biden. And now they're calling Biden and Kamala communists, which is laughable.
Kind of.
And apparently they are slaves to the far left, which is even more laughable.
Yeah,
because they don't give hysterical a fuck about us.
No, they don't. Joe Biden even said, hey, I beat the socialists this week, basically. He was just like, I stopped socialism because I beat the socialists. And I was just like, that's cute that you think Bernie Sanders is like a socialist. He's a democratic mm-hmm. socialist, but he's not a socialist.
Yeah, not a full-fledged. He's still a capitalist. He still relies on capitalism for his policies, but
yeah.
Just, yeah. That's funny, though. I didn't see that. I didn't catch that one.
Yeah.
But yeah. The Lord of Dementia beat socialism. Who would have thought it was that easy?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Who knew?
Yep. So there's only like a couple other things to kind of round off the show. And because we've been covering some bad news, I just want to try to end things on a more positive note. So, of course, we've been doing some Q stuff. We've been covering Q the last handful of episodes. I don't know how many, but at this point, I think it's fair just to make fun of them ever since they've been uncovered, basically. But some of the candidates, the congressional candidates, are still trying to take themselves seriously and go under the Q name or whatever. And one of them we've talked about multiple times is Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia. She attempted to insult Ocasio-Cortez this week, and she kind of forgot how to like spell check. It was pretty cool. So Green tweeted, quote, as a blonde woman, I would like to take a moment to thank Congresswoman AOC. She has handily put an end to all dumb blonde jokes. Blondes everywhere appreciate your service and your sacrifice. So even if that was an autocorrect on iPhone's part or whatever, actually, was that sent from her iPhone? Let's check. Yeah, Twitter for iPhone. So, you know, that could have been an autocorrect issue. You'd think you would like kind of go back and make sure you didn't fuck up your own. It's kind of like when Counter-Strike players used to, you know, call each other slurs or whatever, but then they would like typo the slurs. And it's like at that point, like, you can't really go back and like, you know, correct your spelling. You just kind of have to roll with it. Got to own up that you fucked up your typing. It's like, yeah, or something like that. That's my take on that.
Yeah. Like, I make typos all the time, but I'm also not insulting congresswomen.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, the stakes are just a little bit higher.
Yeah, it's a little bit higher. You want to make sure that punch counts.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just gotta double check your shit. But of course, whatever.
Yeah,
Greens
whatever.
Do whatever Greens do. I think the last bit I had for this was I want to start covering maybe one or two pieces of like science news. For a couple of reasons, primarily because it's just something, it's a little bit of a change of pace. It's a little bit more uplifting, not as depressing as things have been lately. It's also interesting, and it also gives me an excuse to kind of keep better track of science news, which is something I've always been interested in. I just kind of get sidetracked from it, and I never really keep up with all of our fucking brightest minds. So this one in particular, this new report from scientists at UCLA, pretty much discovered why we need sleep. And essentially, it has to do with maintaining your neurons, your neuron connections. Just a snippet from the article. So babies 2.5 years and younger, during that time in their development, they build and strengthen the synapses between neurons. And then after that, quote, after the 2.5 year point, sleep's primary purpose switches from brain building to brain maintenance and repair, a role that it maintains for the rest of our lives. This transition, the researchers say, corresponds to the changes in brain development. So I wanted to bring this up. I mean, of course, it's very interesting. REM. This repair happens during REM sleep, which is like the deepest part of your sleep cycle that we go in and out of a couple times every night, assuming you get uninterrupted sleep. So like sleep has been a mystery for a long time, and this is a pretty good indication of what it's about. But I wanted to bring this up because there's this kind of like notion in our society of like the manly men basically telling everyone else that, hey, I can operate in, you know, 3 to 4 hours of sleep per night because you just power through the day. This is what men do. You gotta be there alert 100% of the time, all the time. And it actually turns out to be pretty dangerous to not get a full night's rest of about 6 to 7 hours, depending on the person, of uninterrupted sleep. That's the important part, because you got to get into REM for this repair shit to happen. I don't know. It's a cultural thing where it's like you can sacrifice sleep in order to do more, be more productive with your day, with yourself. And it's like this endless strive for productivity is kind of driving us off a cliff already, but don't let it sacrifice, don't sacrifice sleep over it either. You know, this research should tell you to take care of yourself just in general, like take care of yourself. It's something I got to do, get better at for sure, but we can all get better at it. But sleep is a big part of it. So get your sleep. Don't let any manly men tell you, you know, guilt trip you into getting, you know, 3 hours of sleep a night. And to take on the world afterwards, just take care of your mind and your body. That's all I got.
Yeah.
That's all I got for this. Oh, well, and on that, because sleep is so important, if you or someone you know has kids that are, you know, 2.5 years or younger, make sure they're not woken up, because it's a very important time during their lives. That's all I got for real.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll keep you updated on what's going on with the Supreme Court and the protests. But if you like what you hear, subscribe to American Shakedown on your favorite podcast app, and give us a review. It helps people find the show, and we will see you next week.
Yep. Thanks for listening.